All right, today is Tuesday, I think, March the 22nd, 1994. My name is Rick Bradley, and I'm in Mesa, Arizona, with Phillies and Braves catcher Stan LaPata. Stan, tell me about how you got interested in baseball as a very small child.
Well, Rick, I couldn't very well tell you exactly how old I was, but it seems like I've been interested in baseball forever. But we played in a neighborhood. The neighborhood was, I was born in a section what they call in Detroit, just outside of Detroit, by the name of Delray, Michigan. And that's not located on a map, but the people that lived in here, where they were proud of that section. There isn't there anymore because they tore it down. They put a garbage disposal plant. But we were proud of it, and I played ball there ever since, I remember. And it started off with softball because we never had too much real good equipment at that time. And no, the gloves and the balls. So we started with softball, we played softball, and we finally graduated up into baseball. And we would play baseball, and then until the cover started coming off the ball in an odd, I don't know, because I could get a hold of the needle and thread or string, I used to sew the covers back up. And we used to use them until we couldn't couldn't be sewed anymore. And then after that, we'd tape them up and then play with them until you couldn't play with them anymore. But like I say, I never remember why I took up catching, because perhaps I loved it, I guess. But like I say, I played practically all my life. I always played something around the neighborhood. We either played baseball or touch football or we had played basketball. But we had a lot of kids that were interested in playing sports, and that's about all we had to do.
Did you play high school, Sandlot,
well,
American Legion, anything?
Yeah, like I say, I was born in Delray, Michigan, and my dad, he came over from the old country, Poland, so did my mother. And they weren't very interested in sports because, they didn't play sports, number one, in Poland. And number two, I had an older brother that played sports and participated in sports, and he got hurt a few times, and they figured that, hey, it's not for the younger. I was the youngest child of five. But I just, like I say, they weren't very interested in baseball. So finally, after I got out of the service compared to nowadays, there was tip money, but I got a slight bonus, and I paid off their mortgage and bought some refrigerator and a stove, and I kind of paid off the mortgage, like I said, and then first thing you know, my dad started to get interested in baseball. But I hope he was proud of me. He passed away. He see me play in Philly a few times, and but he started to enjoy baseball. And as a matter of fact, I didn't know this until later on. It took maybe about 30 minutes to ride by bus downtown in Detroit to get the sporting news. And he used to, every Monday and Tuesday, he used to ride down, because they came out every Monday, I guess. I think perhaps maybe they got it on Tuesdays. And my dad used to get on a bus and used to ride downtown and purchase a sporting news and see how I was doing, because I was in the National League, and in the Detroit papers, they didn't have too much about the National League. So he used to go down and get the sporting news every week until I found out, and then finally I had it sent to his house, because we lived in Philly after that. But I had it delivered to his home, and he wouldn't have to go downtown.
That's a great story. Who was the first scout that approached you, or who was the scout that eventually signed you?
Well, I started out in Delray, Michigan, and I had, beside naturally my brothers and sisters, the fellas that around the neighborhood, I was fortunate that I had an opportunity to play with the older fellas, because I had pretty good ability, but there was several fellows that really helped me out beside my family. As a fellow by the name of, we used to call him Shorty. He must have been about 5'2", I guess, or 5'3". Shorty Sakita. He never played much. Yeah, he never played minor league ball. And I mean, he never played baseball or nothing. But he used to manage us and the kids around the neighborhood. And we played satellite ball. And like I say, I had pretty good ability. But at that age, my arm wasn't that strong. So he used to take me out every day. And we used to go out and play catch and then go out in the ball field, play catch. And then he used to start at the pitcher's mound. And about every 10th throw, he'd keep moving backwards, so I could build up my arm. And finally, until he got to second base, and we just kept throwing. And he really helped me out building my arm. And he let me play with the bigger guys, like I say. And we never had these real great ball fields they have nowadays. But we used to go out and, matter of fact, used to get the rakes. And I used to take the rake from the house. We used to go out and rake the fields and outfields and make sure to just try to pick up most of the stones that were up on a field. But we, and there was Shorty, he helped me an awful lot. And then we have a guy, my gentleman by the name of Cy Perkins. No, Cy Madison. He was my American Legion coach. And he helped me out tremendously. Plus, I know the Detroit Tigers wanted me to sign up with them. And before I got into the service, and they didn't want to offer too much. So Cy told me, he says, "You wait a while." He says, "You'll get a lot more. Just take it easy, and you'll get a lot more money than what they're offering you," know, which I did. So I was thankful for him for that. But going back, I even forgot your question.
Who signed you?
Oh, after that, I played at Eagle Legion ball, and then I played Sandlot ball in Detroit. And after playing a little bit of Sandlot ball, then naturally to World War II, and I was drafted. And I went into service in 43, and then after 43, I went overseas for about a year and a half. Went into the European theater. After the war was over, naturally, they had a little baseball over there, and then I played some baseball over there against guys like Johnny Y. Rostek was in some of the division teams. Johnny Y. Rostek, Ewell Blackwell, Harry the Hat Walker, and they had quite a few major league ball players playing after the war was over there in Europe, and I was playing against them, and that got a little. Something to do with the big leagues when I played against these guys. But then after I got out of the service, I got out in 45, and I came back home and I played three ball games, sandlot ball in Detroit, and we had a guy, he was from Cleveland, a gentleman by the name of Eddie Kranick. He came out, and this was just the time that Mr. Carpenter, Bob Carpenter, owned the ball club, bought the ball club, and he had Herb Pennock as his general manager. And Herb was going to go out and really fix up Mr. Carpenter's ball club. He was going to build a good ball club, which he did. As a matter of fact, the guys that he signed, they were part of quite a few of them were part of the Whiskids that we won a pennant in 1950. But Mr. Kranick came out to Detroit, and he scouted me for a couple ball games, and he had, I think he was Lithuanian, and actually my dad was Polish. But anyway, I think Dad must have got a liking to him, and he talked to my dad, and I would not sign without my parents' permission. And then my brother talked to him, and we finally, like I say, I got that slight bonus, and it was signed by Eddie Kranick. And I started my professional baseball career over in Terre Haute, Indiana in 1946. And I started out there, and I walked into the ballpark, and this was the first night ball game I ever seen in my life, because we never have lights around our neighborhood. And I walked in, and it was like the old football stadiums, and that's where Terre Haute used to play the ball games there. It was a Class B classification. And I walked in the runway coming off the train, and boy, what a thrill that was. Mm-hmm. First major league, the minor league, even the minor league, that was great. Man, that was great. So my first manager was Bill Brubaker. And from there, in 46 and 47, I went to Utica, New York. And it's Class A in the Eastern League. And that's where I met Mr. Sawyer for the first time. Well, I met him in spring training because he was down in spring training. He generally, most of the time in the big leagues, they would take their minor league managers in spring training in a major league ball club, and they'd help out the major league manager and so on. But I met Mr. Sawyer, and then after I had, I stayed in spring training in 47, about a month, and then they shipped me down to Carolina where they had their spring training. And I met Mr. Herb Pinnock down there, and he's a real fine gentleman. And he had these scouts signing some pretty good ball players because they had when he was living and when he was signing all these ball, Robin Roberts was the one, Kurt Simmons, Willie Jones, Richie Ashburn, the Hamner boys, and Putsy Cavallaro. And he signed quite a few these boys that. Well, we were boys at that time, and he signed all of us, and we, first thing you know, we ended up being a Whiskies that won a pennant in 50. But then from Utica, which we won a pennant, and I had a pretty good year down there, and I was voted the most valuable player in 1947. And like I say, Mr. Sawyer was our manager at Utica. And then from there, I went to Toronto, which was our AAA affiliation at that time with the in the minor leagues, and it was AAA, and I went up there in 48, and Mr. Sawyer came up there in 48 with us, and he was there for about a half of the year, and Mr. Carpenter, I guess, decided he wanted to change managers, so he got rid of Ben Chapman, and Mr. Sawyer went up there. And after the 48 season was over in Toronto, I went up at the end of the year to Philadelphia, and then my first full year in the major leagues was 49.
Mm-hmm. Did you always catch when you were growing up? Was that the only position you played, or did you?
Yes, yes. I was a catcher when I was playing. As I played one year in center field in American Legion ball because they did have a catcher from the previous year, and he had one more year to play American Legion, so our manager put me in center field, Cy Madison, which I think that also helped my arm from throwing the ball from center field and long throw and strengthened my arm. So I thought I had a pretty good arm for a catcher. But otherwise, I caught all my life. Except that one year playing center field.
We've already talked about this, but did that have anything to do with who your hero was when you were growing up?
Oh, Black Mike, Mickey Cochran? Well, he was at that time, he was playing initially. And just like these kids nowadays, they pick somebody out that they like and they stay with them. I mean, Mr. Cochran was my idol when I was growing up and playing in in Philadelphia, or in the Detroit area, and I was just I was a little too young though. But when I was playing Legion ball, the Detroit Tigers, the head scout was named by Mr. Wish Egan, and he asked me to come out and catch batting practice for him. And while Mickey was all gone, this was in 43, 42, I caught batting practice with the Detroit Tigers, and they still had pretty great ball clubs. Hank Greenberg, Charlie Gehringer, Billy Rogel, and Pete Fox was one of the outfielders in that schoolboy role. But surprisingly, I caught batting practice, and first thing you know, my first year, towards the end of 48, like I say, I went to the big leagues, and I roomed in the same home with schoolboy role when I got to Philadelphia. I just picked on Black Mike because I thought he was a great catcher. And he had to drive, and he was a tough man. And it was a shame that he had to have a shortened career by being hit in the head by Bob Hadley. But that's what happens in a game of baseball.
What do you remember about you? September the 19th of 48 was your first day in the big leagues. What do you remember about your first day?
Oh, that was, well, The only thing I remember is, I think, you must have the records there, I'll tell you that. But I think the thing I remember is, I think Mr. Heintzman was our pitcher, starting pitcher in Boston. We were playing the Boston Braves, 48 or 49. I think
You're talking about your first time up in the bigs was 48.
At 48.
Yeah, September 48.
I can't remember what.
Well, after you're done with Toronto, then.
Yeah. Oh, 48. That probably went up. I didn't have too many ABs at 48. Mm-hmm. But I remember the first day I caught in the major leagues was I caught Ken Hanselman. I think it was the second game of the season, and I caught the second game, and Ken Hanselman was our pitcher. Mm-hmm. You know, Ken Hanselman was. Well, he had a pretty good year, but he was getting up in years, and Ken did a wonderful job for us. And I learned a lot. I used to hang around with Ken Hanselman, Ken Silvestri, our batting practice pitcher at that time, my name is Major McDonald. We used to go out, and I used to have a few beers and talk baseball after our ball games and have a few beers and have a sandwich and then take off and go back to our rooms. But we discussed baseball, and I learned a lot of baseball from these two fine, Ken Silvestri and Ken Hanselman.
How were you treated when you first came up to the big leagues? Was it they were happy to see you, or was it a case of here comes a 23-year-old guy taking over somebody's job, somebody maybe that the older guys had played with for years and years, and it was a...
Well, Rick, it's a funny thing. Like I mentioned, I was catching batting practice for the Tigers when these guys like Greenberg and Gehringer and Rogel and them guys were there. At that time, I remember when I was catching batting practice, these what they call the Scribinis, the guys that never played. I mean, they'd play, but they'd be sitting on a bench, or there'd be utility men. They used to call them Scribinis. And these guys try to sneak in to hit with the regulars. And boy, these guys really got all over. There's no way I never saw any one of these guys come in and hit when the regulars were hitting. And even when that time says the guy's supposed to hit at 130, the regulars hit at 130, that's it. They would not leave these guys taking an extra swing or nothing else. But when I got up there, they treated us kids real well. I mean, because we knew them in spring training, and we got to know these older fellas pretty good. And they got to know us, and I guess they had an idea that we had possibilities. We were prospects, so they figured, they were nice, and they treated us pretty good. You know, sometimes they say we were prospects, and some guys were suspects. So, I mean, you know, there's a difference in them.
Let's kind of go year by year. I'll pick out some things, and you just tell me what you remember about them. We're not going to talk about every single year, but... In 49, a couple of things that I have written down here was, first of all, was Eddie Waitkus. And when he was shot in Chicago.
That was a surprise to everybody. And naturally, it was a surprise, right? Because, Eddie wasn't married. And I think he was known as a women's man, I think. I don't know. I knew Ed. Matter of fact, after his second tour with the Phillies, I roomed with him. After all that incident, and Ed was a heck of a guy, real nice guy, and I was glad to be known Eddie. And it happened the way it happened in the papers. I mean, everybody says that he was going to go up with this girl and everything else and stay the night, but that was a real misconception. And I think it's just one of these things that, just like even nowadays. I mean, it's worse nowadays than I think it was then. She was a Eddie Waitkus fan, and she liked Eddie, and that was it. So somehow she wanted to get meet Eddie, and so she registered, I guess, into the Edgewater Beach Hotel where we were staying. And he left a note in Eddie's box and said that she was from, I think Eddie was from Brockton, Mass. So she says, I'm from Brockton, Mass, and I come up to my room, and we can talk and discuss about the home, about our home area. So, yeah, I guess I understand. He went in up there where our room was. He knocked on the door, and the first thing you know, Eddie closed the door, and by the time he closed the door, first thing you know, she had this gun and let him have it. So, but that was a shock. As a matter of fact, we Naturally, we got up for breakfast. We went out and said, "Hey, did you hear?" I said, "Hear what?" He says, "Eddie got shot." I said, "You got to be kidding." He said, "No, he got shot just last night." So that was quite a shock to everybody. But he bounced back and he did a wonderful play because he returned and he played in the 50 with the 50 book club. Yeah.
Another thing that happened in 49 was something that certainly doesn't happen today. There was an umpire by the name of George Barr. And I guess there was a fly ball that he ruled was trapped, and I guess maybe the Philly fans thought it wasn't trapped, and they started with a barrage of bottles onto the field, and he forfeited the game to the Giants. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't like to knock umpires, but if it happens, I mean, after all, they're human, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think it was, as a matter of fact, I think it was Ashburn that... supposed to have trapped the ball, but he caught the ball. And like you say, the fans got in Philadelphia. They're tough. They're tough fans. And we're playing at County Mac Stadium. In fact, that's the only town that they throw snowballs at Santa Claus. But it's a tough town. We get a ball for team. So, but it really happened, and I can remember. I thought maybe you were going to bring up the fight we had with the Giants.
Well, let's talk about that. Good.
No, Mr. Sawyer was there. I think it was 50. It wasn't 1950. We had a series before we were going to New York, play the Brooklyn Dodgers, we were going to play the Giants first. And we had a pretty good lead. We're going to play the Giants, and then the last two or three games we're going to be with the Dodgers, finish the season off. That's the year we won a pennant. And anyway, we go to the Polo Grounds, and before we go to the Polo Grounds, they come to Philadelphia. And Semenik's doing most of the catching. But anyway, we're playing, and Stanky's playing second base. So Stanky would get behind second base when Andy was hitting. So then first thing you know, Annie's up there hitting, and Stanky's behind second base, and when the pitcher's winding up, he starts waving his arm and doing a jumping jack. And this kind of, naturally, it shakes Andy up. Not so much shakes him up, but it distracts him. So finally, after two or three times, they finally make him stop. So anyway, Andy gets on base. I don't know, ground ball, infield hit, or something like that. But anyway, Andy gets on first base. There was a ground ball hit to somewhere in the infield. They go for a double play, and first thing you know, old Andy really naturally he barrels into Eddie Stanky, and well, you know the reputation Eddie Stanky had. But anyway, they start going at it, and both ball clubs, they got in the field, and they really go at it, and finally they eject. After that thing is all settled down, they send. Stanky, they get rid of him, they throw him out of the ball game. And then another incident came up there that Henry Thompson was playing third base for the Giants. And Andy goes into third base real hard and kind of spills him over and everything else. And so there was bad blood between both ball clubs. So then we go to New York. Like we're about six games out front. And we got about three double hitters play against the Giants. We're about six, seven games out, and the first thing you know, they'll rip us pretty good. And that's where Thompson, in return, he comes back. Semenik had played at home plate, and he broke his ankle a little bit. So after that, like I say, we lost. We had, I guess, a two-game lead when we played Brooklyn. Finish it off, they beat us about 5 out of 6, or maybe 6 out of 6. They beat us 3 doubleheaders. So then we go to Brooklyn, and then we lose the first game. Now we're 2 games out front. We lose the first game, and then Robbie pitches that last game of the season. And Pee Wee Reese hits a ball in the right field, and if you know if you've ever been in Ebbets Field, but they had a little fence up there, and there's a little, like a shelf up there with a screen on top of that, and the ball sticks in there. So instead of a ground rule double, they give them a home run. So the Tigers score 1-1, so we go up in the ninth inning. So we get, they get a rally going, and then Abrams is on second base, and I don't know, Ashburn's playing short. I don't know what he's thinking about it, but anyway, it turns out real well. And I'm catching, because Andy had the bad day. Ankle, and Mr. Sawyer, he put a runner in. Andy got on, I think, in the eighth or ninth inning, and he put a runner in for Andy. And I went to catch. And then, like I say, Abrams is on second base, and Duke Snyder's the hitter. And I think perhaps maybe Ashburn thinks he's going to bunt or whatever. There's nobody out. So anyway, he goes out and he hits a one line shot, one hop to Richie Ashburn in center field, who was playing short. And Milt Stocks, the coach for the Dodgers at third base, and he sends Abrams in. And Abrams could run pretty good, but not that good. But anyway, Ashburn throws this ball, a perfect throw. He threw me one hop and I catch the ball, and we had him about 15 or 25 feet, no problem. And I tagged him. I tagged him out, and I don't want Duke to go any farther to second base, so I just charge him and tag Abrams out, and then we make sure that Snyder doesn't go to second base. But eventually they got Snyder and Hodges and Robinson coming up. And it was, like I say, we tagged Kell out, and then Duke wouldn't advance to second base. I tagged him out, and I make sure he get out to him so he doesn't advance. But anyway, they have Hodges, and they have Robinson and their senator batting order. And first thing you know, Robbie gets out of it. And then coming up in the 10th inning, that's the inning that Sisler hits the three-run homer to beat the Brooklyn Dodgers so we win the pennant. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if Abrams scores, we have a tie with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and after that, I don't know who we're going to pitch, because Robbie was been pitching quite a bit that whole last week.
I think it went three times in five games.
That's right. He was pretty well wore out, but I tell you one thing, he pitched one heck of a game up there in that last game of the season, when especially he had that meat of the batting order up there, and he sure got those guys out.
Now, what was, just before the series, what was the deal with Kurt Simmons? They wouldn't let him play in the series.
Well, what it was, he was in the National Guard, and they made him go into the service. So when they took him and put him in the service, but they still wouldn't even pitch for us in the World Series. And we didn't embarrass ourselves in the series. We lost four straight, they beat us four straight, but most of them were pretty close ball games. If we have Kurt all year, we win that pennant a little earlier, and then we don't have to worry about that. I think the pennant was the big thing of the year for us. And the World Series, was secondary. But with Kurt gone, it kind of hurt us, and Bob Miller kind of hurt his arm for us. And then there was Bubba Church, he got hit on the left eye by Ted Kluszewski, and we thought we'd never see again, but our pitching staff was a little hurting. The only thing we had good about it, well, we had Jim Constanti, who did one heck of a job for us that year.
Well, now, being from Cleveland like I am, and only being, well, I'll be 35 years old next month, I don't know anything about the World Series, so why don't you go over the four series games?
Well, that's something that, naturally, I'll always remember. You can't very well explain what it really is until you are in one. Not only the Super Bowl or World Series or hockey for the championship. You can't explain the feeling, but it's a great feeling, and it's great to be in one. And even if I didn't do that much in my career, I can always say I was one of 1950 whiskeys. We won a pennant and I was in a World Series. Matter of fact, there's some stuff over there that I keep telling people. We lost the first game 1-0. Jim Constani, like I say, Robin Roberts, he pitched three or four times in a week, in 5 days or something like that. So he was pretty well tired at that time. So Mr. Sawyer, he pulled something like Connie Mack did when he pulled this guy to pitch in their World Series against the Chicago Cubs, the left-hander.
Howard Emke.
Right. So Mr. Sawyer went out and he got Mr. Jim Constani. He pitched their opening day in a World Series. Pitched a heck of a ball game. Great ball game. We lose the game 1-0. Bobby Brown, I think, hits a ball down the left field line. He hits a double to score their only run. But you got to give the other guy credit. He pitched a pretty good ball game, too. In the second game, Robbie comes, he pitches the second ball game. And Joe DiMaggio hits a home run in the 10th inning to beat us. And I was catching, because naturally, well, not naturally, but they took Seminick out, cut off his ankle, and Mr. Sawyer took him out for a base runner. So I went to catch, and I keep telling people I called for the wrong pitch. But anyway, Joe DiMaggio, he hit a pretty good pitch. The ball was low and away. Nice, good fastball Robbie threw, and I think Joe DiMaggio hit a few of those good pitches. Joe was a great ball player. He was phenomenal. It was only disappointing that I didn't perhaps maybe play in the American League to watch him play more often, because with his grace as an outfielder and his hitting and so forth, and Mr. DiMaggio was a great ball player, as everybody knows. But anyway, in the third game, we were in it a little bit in the third game, and then naturally the fourth game, they kind of blew us out. If I come up in the ninth inning and I pinch hit and I've hit the home run, it's a tie ball game, but that's near or there. I have another thing. I mean, it's not, in a way, I'm proud of it. I was the guy that, 1950, I closed the 1950 World Series because I struck out. But, I mean, at least I was in it, you know. I mean, it's no honor. Nowadays, it's getting to the point the way these guys are striking out nowadays. I mean, it's an honor to strike out. But I'm proud of it because, like I say, there's things, all the hoopla and all everything else. It's a great feeling. And like I say, what I said from the beginning, we're discussing about the 50 World Series. There is no way, and there's nobody can explain when he's in like a series or Super Bowl or NBA championship. There is no way a man can explain how the feeling really is. No way, no. You can't. There's no comparison. You can't explain. I can't explain it, but it's a great feeling. I know that.
What did you think of that Yankee team?
In 1950, they had a pretty good ball club. And a guy that really beat us, we didn't think too much about, was Coleman, I think, or Martin. No, Coleman, I think. He had a good average. He beat us. He got quite a few hits. He played second base. Mm-hmm. He did a good number on us.
In 51, you only spent a little bit of time with the Phils.
Yeah, they shipped me down to Baltimore, and I hurt my knee down there, and then I come back in 52, and I was with 52 ever since, until I was traded to the Milwaukee Braves in 59.
Now, you didn't spend a lot of time with the Phils in 51, but what happened from 50 to 51? They went from going to the World Series to finishing about 23 games back.
Well, there's a lot of things that Mr. Sawyer wanted done, and Mr. Carpenter at that time, that's why I heard stories about it. And he wanted a few different ball players or get rid of a few older ball players, and Mr. Carpenter wouldn't want to do it. And first thing you know, I guess these guys came up with the bad years all at one time, and that's why they went down. We weren't up there ever since. We never got back up there.
Mm-hmm. From 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, your home runs went 4, 8, 14, 22, and 32. Now, what was the reason for that? Was there a change in your batting stance or something? Did Rogers Hornsby give you a tip? Or?
No, everybody says it was Roger Hornsby, but that's a big. It sounds good though. But no, he didn't give me a tip. We had another guy back home in Delray, Michigan. He was a minor leaguer. A guy named Wally Novak. He played I know 1 year when I got out of the service. Matter of fact, the reason I remember, he played quite a bit of minor league ball, and I met him. I got out of the service in New York, and I had a little time, and I knew he was there, so I met him in a hotel where he was staying. He was playing with the Newark Birds at that time, the Yankee chain. I think they had Newark, and they also had Kansas City both at the same time. So Lefty, he kind of batted with an open stance and faced the pitcher, and but he was left-handed. So in 56, I think what happened in 52 and going down before 56, I just started to play a little more, that's why. I got more home runs, but in 56 was my real great, best year I ever had in the major leagues. But anyway, I go down and I'm not doing too good, and we're in Chicago, so I'm rumored with Johnny Rye Rostek, real fine gentleman. We roomed together, and we used to go out and have breakfast, and we stayed at the Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago, and Roger Hornsby, they were sitting there in the lobby. And Johnny knew him when he was managing Cincinnati. So well, naturally we shared a check, but this time I paid it. After Johnny gave me, I wasn't one of these guys that paid a check. We'd split the check most of the time, but this time I went up to the cashier and paid the bill. And when I came, after that was over with, I came by where Johnny was talking to Mr. Hornsby. John says, "What do you think about this guy?" Because everybody knows Roger Hornsby was a great hitter. So he seen me play a few times when he was at Cincinnati, and he says, "Well, I see him on television, and I think what he should do is try to make contact with the ball. Try to hit the ball every time you swing. Not necessarily, he didn't mean to necessarily get a base hit, but just get a piece of the ball." Okay, fine. So we talked a little longer, and the first thing we know, we had to head out to the ballpark. So we went out to the ballpark, and like I say, I wasn't doing too good. So I figured, let me fool around. So I changed my stance a little bit. I opened up, and I remembered about this Wally Novak, or Lefty Novak, the way Lefty, the way you call him. And he had a bad wheel, by the way, too. He had a bad knee. He had it hurt in a car accident. But anyways, I remember the way he'd stand. And so I stood. I opened up, faced the pitcher. And I crouched just a little bit. It felt real good. I could see the ball better. And I was known, my power alley was right center and left center. And when I started to change my stance, I couldn't hit a ball on the right-hand side of the infield even if I tried, which I did many times, especially with a man on second base and try to get him over. I couldn't hit the ball in the right field to save my soul. But anyway, I go out there and the first day I got one or two hits. The second day I went up, and I got down a little lower. Very comfortable. I could pick up the ball, and like Roger says, I was just concentrating on getting a piece of the ball every time I swung. Next day I got two more hits. Then we go to Milwaukee. And I got down where I stood, generally, just like where we're sitting right now, that's the way I stood. I go into Milwaukee, and I get three hits. Hey, man. This was great. I stay down there and everybody's moaning and groaning. When you're going good, everybody's moaning and groaning. It's like Burdett, you know. When he was going real good, winning all those ball games, they say you should throw the spitter because he was going good and everything else. But after he started getting knocked around a little bit, they never brought the subject up that he threw a spitter. So anyway, I started to go real good and everybody's complaining. Here's a guy 6'4". I was only 6'2", but they say 6'4", and he's got a strike zone of 3'5". Because, I cheated a little bit. I could see if the ball was a little high, and I thought perhaps maybe I could hit it. I'd stand up and hit the ball. But if I thought perhaps maybe I couldn't hit the ball, I'd just stay down, and the umpire would call it a ball. But anyway, that was the year I went out, and that's what it happened. I stayed with that stance. And that's the year I hit the 32 home runs, 95 runs batted in, and I think I hit seven triples. I hit 32 or 33 doubles. And I think those are still records for right-hand hitter and right-hand hitting catcher for the Philadelphia Phillies. Dalton knocked in more RBIs, and that's the only thing he beat out of the record. But he's left-handed. So I say, yeah, I still hold the record for right-hand hitting catcher.
What was the deal in 54 when Bob Carpenter was having players followed?
Yeah, I mean, that's Philadelphia. Oh, I don't know. He thought perhaps maybe we should finish better than what we did, and the way we were playing ball, I guess he figured it some. I don't know, understand why he had it done in Philly. If he was going to have somebody following Philly, he should have had some detective following these guys on the road. These guys, I mean, we have our families in Philadelphia. So, I mean, I don't know why. But anyway, he had it done. That's what kind of good detective he got. He got a detective that he's supposed to have been following Willie Jones, and he was following Granny Hamner. But anyway, Granny, knowing Granny, he was kind of perturbed about it. And as a matter of fact, I think he got a gun and he was going to go after him. But anyway, I don't know the reason he wanted him followed, but they had, like I say, I don't understand why he had him followed in Philadelphia. He should have had him followed on when we went on the road, but he followed him when we were in Philly. That was a big joke. The guy can't even follow the right guy.
How about the All-Star game the next year in 55?
Oh, that was quite an experience. I would say that'd be about second to the World Series. You get picked for the All-Star game. And I was fortunate to be in two of them. I participated in one, the one in 55, over in Milwaukee. And
now, just let me interrupt for a second. Who did the picking back then? Was it the players that picked, or was it the fans, or?
I believe it was I was picked in 55 due to the fact that Campanella got hurt, and DeRocher was the manager, and he picked me to replace Campanella. Yeah. I believe it was the ballplayers that picked him, I'm not sure. But anyway, he picked me out to replace Campanella, who got hurt. And it was a great honor. And that was a game, I think I caught five or six innings, because it went extra innings. I think in the 13th or 14th inning, and Stan Musial hit a home run to win a ball game for the National League. And that's, like I say, that's being an All-Star game is about, it'll never compare to a World Series, but it comes pretty close. And in 56, I was picked again, and this was in Washington, and Walt Alston was the manager. And there was two of us, I don't think, that played with Roberts and myself. And after the game was over, they tried to get everybody in to play, but it was just one of those unfortunate, just to be there. Hey, get a book or a magazine or a scorecard, there's Stan Lopetta, All-Star team. That's great. I mean, I was disappointed I didn't play, but after the game was over, he came over and apologized for not using us, but I think it was Robbie and myself were the only two that didn't play out of that whole squad, but it was a great thrill being in the All-Star game.
The following year, in 57, there's two things I want to go over. First off, the Phillies were the last team in the National League, anyway, to integrate. John Kennedy played in April 57. Now, what was that a decision you think that Mr. Carpenter made, or was there pressure at that time for him to finally integrate the Phillies, or am I just making something? I don't know.
I think it was just a combination of everything. I think what it was is perhaps maybe there wasn't enough colored ball players that were good enough to play. But as a matter of fact, Kennedy, I don't think he was that great of a shortstop. He wasn't that great of a ball player.
I think he only lasted five games or five at-bats or something.
I mean, it's not the idea of whether black or white or Chinese or anything else. If you don't have the ability, I mean, this is just like Michael Jordan at the present time. I mean, I think it's a joke, I think myself, because if it was like the Rockies or Miami or somebody like that, it'd be a different story. But here's the Chicago White Sox who have an opportunity to win their division and get in the World Series, and they're going to put Michael Jordan in there to take guys on a roster. that could help them out instead of having Michael Jordan there, I think that's a big mistake.
I think it's a
because I know they're going to send him out. I understand according to the paper, but I don't believe that's the right thing to do. I mean, that's all you read about is Michael Jordan. There's Thomas, and it's a pretty good ball clubs on that book. Ball players on that ball club. But anyway, that's their business. That's what they want to do. And I don't think everybody's worried about how many he's won. He got 3 hits and 12 times or better, 21 times. Baseball isn't just hitting and catching. You got to know how to run the bases. You got to know to throw to the right bases. There's a lot of fundamentals in baseball besides throwing and catching baseballs and hitting baseballs.